evening and welcome to episode 55 of the Deck Tease Podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. With me tonight to talk about the shenanigans that we got into at Gen Con this past weekend is 1/4 of the Brainstorm Brewery. You can also find his articles on GatheringMagic.com and also Quiet Speculation. Hello, Jason Ault.
Hello, Erin. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. I'm amazed you even want to be on my show. Like, you're you. Like.
I don't know what that means.
Well, you've been in the game so much longer than me in terms of like podcasting and things like that. So when I saw that you were following me and I saw that you were interested, I was like, what does he want with me? Like I still equate people to, if you could see my hands right now, like you're up here, I'm sort of down here, and I'm doing it with my hands like a scale. And I'm always just like, what does he want? Like, we have nothing. Oh, okay. So I'm very flattered that you'd want to be on my show. It really does.
Oh, nonsense. I feel the total opposite. I feel like you've just been on a tear lately and just been getting great guests. And I'm like, all right.
Well, you're continuing the trend of great guests.
Let's set the bar high. I want everybody disappointed by the end.
Exactly. So I did a little bit of research on you prior to today in one of your recent articles on Quiet Speculation, and you make mention of the fact that you were a chemist.
Yeah. That's I have a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry.
That's interesting. So how come are you, is that part of your career? Or did you stray from that? Or?
Well, the market's a little bad right now. So okay. I was working at a company that did pharmaceutical research with animals. Which Ooh. Was fine. Yeah, it was cool. Like, I actually got to feed monkeys and stuff like that. It was actually pretty sweet. I wanted to do a little bit more analytical work, a little bit more in the lab with, you know, some different instruments. So I actually took a one-year contract at a different company, knowing full well that at the end of that year, I might not get picked up. Mm-hmm. So that one-year contract ended about 18 months ago, and I haven't been able to get a job in the industry. But around the time that 1 year was wrapping up, Ryan Bouchard, who, if you know, your listeners aren't familiar with him, he's Gathering Magic's finance writer. He's another Brainstorm Brewery member, and he's you know, one of my friends from the local area. Mm-hmm. So Ryan and I go way back, and he told me, "Look, like, I'm trying to get sort of a business started. I'm trying to kind of next level with the whole value trading, and I'd love to have somebody who can help me out." So he sort of trained me at that point. Like, I was just sort of doing it on weekends, but I still had the job. And then when the job ended, I felt like I was ready to transition into doing the value trading and selling on eBay and all that stuff full time. So I've been doing that, you know, I've been doing MTG finance full time for about 18 months.
So you're actually making a living off of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is, wow. This is my whole job. Yeah.
Wow. And it's so funny because I remember talking about this when I had Medina on the show. And like, when I look at my cards, I just don't see that. I'm not saying I don't believe you, but like I'm looking around right now and I have rogue piles just all over my computer desk. I have a binder on the floor to the right of me at my feet. And it's interesting that when you look at your cards, you see your income. You see your, you know, you see your, what I'm looking for, your livelihood. Sure, and when I look at these cards, I'm just like, I don't know how you would do that. Like, it's so foreign to me. Like, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Honestly, it's really not that bad because cards go up, mm-hmm. like, mostly. Stuff when it rotates out of standard will tank, but it will still go back up later. So everything goes up. And if you're in a position where you're like, look, I'm a store, essentially. You know, what I do is I will pay buy list. And most people are okay with buy list. Because when you break it down for people, they're like, hey, this card's worth $10. I don't want to give it to you for $4.50 or $5. And you're like, okay. Do you have a TCG player eBay account? And they're like, no. And we're like, okay, well, if you set one up, you would pay all the fees. It's $10 in Star City, but it's not gonna be $10 on eBay. It's gonna be like maybe $8 on eBay. By the time you pay fees, you're gonna make $6, or you could sell it to me for $5. Mm-hmm. And most of the time people are like, you know what, screw it. It's a lot of work to get that $6. Or I could just, you know, just ship it to you and you'll end up making $7.50 or whatever because, you know, your fees are lower and blah, blah, blah. So some people don't want to sell a $10 card for less than $10, which is fine. But a lot of people are happy just to get the cash for their cards. So yeah. If you can do that, if you can pay 50% of a card's value and sell it, you made 50%. It doesn't matter what the card is. Right. If the card goes up before you sell it, great, you made more money. The card goes down, you made a little less, but honestly, like, it takes a little bit longer for stuff to go down across the board because everyone has to adjust their prices lower, mm-hmm. and no one's in a big hurry to do that.
Right.
So yeah, it's almost like easy mode, really. Like, you're just going to make 50% on the cards for doing all the work. It's like a 60-hour a week job, but it's a lot more fun than anything I've done before.
It's funny that you say that, because I understand that you are breaking it down quite well, but in my mind, you're basically speaking Cantonese. Like, it goes in my ear, it goes in my head, and I just don't, I still feel like I wouldn't even know where to begin, and I really admire, you know, you guys that are really good at finance, because I really don't even trade, to be quite honest. Like, I'm very spoiled with the fact that I have my store credit that comes from Legit, and, you know, I want it now. I'm very Veruca Salt about it. When I see a card that I want, I really don't want to putz around with the bartering and the haggling and the reading all the signals. It's easier for me to be like, here's $10. I want that. Pull it out of the case and give it to me. And I just don't understand. I don't really understand the language of the buy and sell and the thrill and all that stuff. And it's I'd like to someday, but I just don't get it. It's just not me.
It's almost like a microcosm for stock trading, but yeah. With training wheels.
Yeah.
Because if you buy a penny stock and you go, like, I don't know, 200 shares deep, and then it doesn't do anything, you're out all your money. Mm-hmm. But if you kind of speculate similarly on, like, a bulk rare and you buy it in bulk, then it's always going to be worth at least what you paid. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll probably lose a little bit of money in that, but, like, it's real safe to go deep on a bulk rare, because if it hits, then, you know, congrats, it goes up by 10 times or whatever. Mm-hmm. So speculation is maybe a third of MTG Finance. Mm-hmm. It's certainly what a lot of people associate with it. Anytime something goes up for what people assume is no reason, they think it's speculators doing that. And sometimes it is. But speculating is not really my bread and butter anymore. You know, it's fun. You know, there's a definite rush that comes with hitting. Like when I was buying Sphinx's Revelation for like $4, mm-hmm. when those went to 25, that felt real good. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it's great, and it feels real bad if you don't hit on something. You know, I got a lot of money tied up in Mutilate that never went anywhere. Very famously, Seance.
Oh.
which I still managed to make money on Seance, even though nobody really agreed with us that it was as good as just playing. Basically, our list was Brad Nelson's list, but with Seance in it, and Brad Nelson kind of said, yeah, you don't need Seance. Just mm-hmm. put in better cards. So even though nobody agreed with us, we still managed to make money on it. So even when a spec doesn't hit, you still probably don't lose a ton of money. So speculation is a part of it, and that's fun. A lot of people can see the, I've got all these haunted plate mails, and when haunted plate mail goes somewhere, I can make a lot of money. So it's fun. It's like playing the lottery, but your knowledge actually matters mm-hmm. a little bit more. Like being able to assess the metagame matters.
Right. So this must be an exciting time for you. We've got From the Vaults coming out. There's been a lot of talk about that and how the prices are shifting with that. Theros is coming out, I believe, next month as well. And this seems like it's really your time where you're doing a lot of that speculating and you're doing a lot of that anticipating and rotation's coming. And people are wondering whether or not they should hold on to some of their standard cards or whether they should trade them away and which ones they should, if anything. And it really seems like this would be, you know, this time of year would be where you really shine. Would you agree with that?
Rotation's always very busy, mm-hmm. but I think people are starting to get a little savvier and prices start dropping a little bit in advance of rotation every time rotation comes up. Mm-hmm. If you look at Huntmaster could still be like a $22 card right now, but it's not. It's like $8. It's like, because everyone knows, like, great, I'm not going to buy Huntmaster now. If I've got them, I'm going to keep them if I want to play with them. Mm-hmm. But if I don't think I'm going to play with them for the next month, I better just get out of them while they're 12.
Yeah.
Before they hit 8. Like, I don't know if Huntmaster gets played enough in Modern that it'll go back up. I'm certainly staying away from them. But but say this was 2010, an analog to Huntmaster would have been, I don't even know, something like Great Sable Stag? I don't know. I don't know what, like, I wasn't in finance back then.
Right.
But it would have taken a lot longer for the prices to start to creep down, because people still want to play with Huntmaster and they're going to right until rotation. Mm-hmm. But the people, you know, are realizing, I probably don't want to pay $22 to pick this up 3 weeks before I can't play it in standard.
Yeah.
So everyone's getting started a little earlier, but it's fine because Huntmaster is probably going to sink even more below like 6.8 or whatever it is now. And it might actually be terrible to pick them up depending on whether you think it'll get played in the future, because stuff tends to go back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only sort of speculating that I've been doing lately is I really wanted to make a good show out of being ready for rotation. I came back to the game when Innistrad and Dark Ascension came out. So this was the first time, it was the last rotation we experienced when we lost Scars and all of them. That was my first time going through a rotation, and I felt very unprepared for it. And since I've seen a lot more and I've experienced a lot more and I'm friends with a lot more people that have experienced and they're very wise and I've learned from them, I really wanted to be ready for this go around. So I've been stocking up on what I believe to be the staples. So I made sure to pick up my Dreadbores, my Abrupt Decays, my Verdicts, my Revelations, my Smiters, my Reckoners, you know, just so that when that day comes, I'm set. So I'm not like, you know, I'm not worried that I don't have these cards. So when people do start forming deck lists and they're like, these are the decks of the new season, I'm not going, I don't have anything. I want to be ready. And I've already started building decks, and I just want to make sure I have all of those good cards. And I think really the only, but even then, it's like there are things that I think might be a staple that might not be, but I'm hedging my bets and hoping that I'm right and that I haven't been wrong in stocking up on these cards.
Well, if stuff is worth a certain amount when you have a lot of sets to choose from, it's unlikely that after rotation, if it doesn't get play, it's going to go down sharply. So mm-hmm. you're not really poised to lose a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. There are two aspects to every rotation. There's the stuff that's getting less play now that's going to go up when it gets more play. Mm-hmm. And there's the stuff that is going to get no play in Standard because it's no longer legal. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't sell your Geist of St. Traft, your Liliana of the Veil, stuff like that, because that's mostly not played in Standard. Mm-hmm. But the stuff that's, you know, just Standard, something like Huntmaster, which they tried to make a card in Modern and hasn't really taken off. Mm-hmm. Like, don't lose your shirt on that. Like, if you could, in a time machine, go back and sell the Huntmasters for 22, that's ideal.
Yeah.
But for right now, like, the more you hold them, the more they're just going to tank. So that's it feels like losing money there. So that's what people are most focused on when it comes to rotation. But you're absolutely right that you need to be prepared for the stuff that could go up more. Mm-hmm. Stuff like, I don't know, what's the thing that puts a 5/5 worm token?
Advent of the Worm.
Advent.
I have 4 of those.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Advent, stuff like that. Stuff. If you look at the block, I think this block Pro Tour, more than most years, is going to reflect what the metagame is going to look like going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Dreadbore is a card you mentioned. I think that's good. I think 1-for-1 removal is about to improve. Because, mm-hmm. like, Dreadboring a Huntmaster, it's like, great, I still got a Wolf Token. Still got the life. Like, great. Oh, Dreadbore my Thrag Tusk. Fantastic. Oh, you're going to Dreadbore my Thrag Tusk? Okay, well, I'll play Restoration Angel. Like, all those kind of shenanigans. 1-for-1 removal feels really bad right now. But I think it's about to improve.
Yeah.
So, less hexproof, less shenanigans, less comes into play and leaves play abilities.
Thank God. I'm very excited about this upcoming format. And I feel, like I said, compared to last year, I feel very confident and I feel very ready. So when that day comes and everybody else is like, I don't know what I'm going to play, I'm like, really? Well, I've got this here Esper Control deck that I've been testing for the last month and I'm ready to go.
Spells are going to be better.
Yes.
Finally. Yes. Spells are going to, like, because creatures are doing all the spell stuff.
Right.
It's like, why would you play Cloud Shift when you can play Restoration Angel?
Even the green-red Kibler deck that people have been playing, it played the last list I saw of it. Granted, there were, you know, slight variations here and there. 4 Mizzia Mortars, 4 Searing Spear, all creatures, 4 Domri Raid. That's really all you need. And, like, to me, that's sort of a sad reality where it's like, that's really all you need to get by. That's, I don't like that.
I don't, I like creatures being on top for a while. That's fine. You know, like maybe a whole 2 years. It's cool. It's going to. And I think from what we've seen out of Theros with the monstrosity or monstrous.
Yeah.
And the heroic abilities, creatures are still going to be pretty relevant, but you're going to want some spells, too.
Yeah. So, Jason, you spend a lot of time talking finance on the podcast Brainstorm Brewery. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the show, how it got started and how you got involved with the show?
Well, I mentioned earlier I'm friends with Ryan Bouchard. He was one of the original three. The cast was originally three main members. That's Marcel White, Marcel White does not like me telling everyone his last name is Marcel White. He likes to go by Marcel MTG.
Oh.
Sorry, buddy. Corbin Hostler and Ryan Bouchard were the original three on the cast, and then they would try to have a guest every once in a while. So they started out, basically, people were saying, hey, there's no finance podcast. There's a podcast for pretty much every niche aspect of this game, but no one's talking about finance. So I think if they were just talking on Twitter, I imagine Ryan and Corbin followed each other. And Marcel is just the podcast. He's the man when it comes to podcasting. He was on Monday Night Magic. He's guested on, you know, so many podcasts, and he was actually interested in about starting another podcast. So the three of them just sort of gravitated together. He had two people who were professional finance writers. Ryan was writing for Quiet Speculation and then later Gathering Magic. And Corbin was writing for Quiet Spec and then later Legit. So they were, you know, two people that, you know, Ryan, like me, makes his living at finance, and Corbin makes a pretty decent side living. So they wanted to talk finance. Marcel wanted to be part of another podcast, and they just sort of got together. And I didn't do my first guest spot until maybe episode 8. Ryan and I were, I think we were shop crawling, and he's like, hey, I got to record the podcast from the road. Would you like to be a guest? And I was like, that's cool. So we had some chemistry. I was brought back as a guest again, and I didn't ever want to like try to impose myself on the cast. I'd never dreamed I'd be a member of the podcast, because I thought it was such a big deal before I did it. Like Ryan did, and he's like, record the podcast. I'm like, you're so lucky you get to report a podcast. And then I was a guest, and I really liked it. We thought we had a good dynamic, and then I was brought back as a guest a second time, and eventually they're like, well, since I was hanging out with Ryan, because we were doing all these trips together, they're like, every time you record, you got Jason there. Why not just have him on the cast? Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize I was auditioning, but I guess I kind of was. So right. I guess I passed the audition. Maybe if they told me that it was an audition, I might have blown it. Who knows? But
no pressure.
Yeah, but since I didn't know. So now we have the four of us, and a guest makes five. But I still don't think that's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think four is the right number for a podcast.
Well, I would definitely love to be on your show sometime.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. We have so many people that we want, and it's all a matter of scheduling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely.
And you guys started off on the MTG cast, correct?
Yes.
And then you moved over to Gathering Magic, and I believe, was it May of this year, last year?
See, your research is probably better than my recollection.
It was very recent at that.
Yeah, it was pretty recent. Honestly, well,
what prompted the move?
I'll tell you that we wanted to get paid.
Really?
we wanted sort of some backing. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, hey, we're making a ton of money, because we can't disclose what Gathering Magic's paying us, but it's not like an income for me, mm-hmm. especially not split four ways. What that pays for is our tokens. It paid for all the food at that house out in Vegas. Mm-hmm. It paid for the playmats. Like anytime we have to front money for something and then we like get the money back, we have sort of a fund. It pays for the website hosting. So we were going out of pocket before. Mm-hmm. Like when we got the original tokens by Inkwell Looter, the 1/1 Slimer tokens.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen those.
Yeah. I have.
We went out of pocket for that. And now that we're with Gathering Magic, we get paid a little bit, and we use it all for promotional stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a conflict that developed when MTG Cast sold ad space, ironically enough, to a website I write for. Mm-hmm. Quiet Speculation is paying for ads, and there was a conflict with us being sponsored by Cool Stuff Inc., which is the store that sponsors Gathering Magic.
Yeah.
Cool Stuff Inc. didn't want to pay us to basically have a conflicting ad. Because even though Quiet Speculation is not really a store, there was a bit of a conflict there. And Marcel kind of felt the way that they announced they were doing that ad before everyone's podcast kind of rubbed Marcel the wrong way, too, a little bit. I wouldn't say it was like an acrimonious fallout, but we didn't even really have to debate the finer points of it, whether or not we wanted to stay with MTG Cast after they imposed this ad on everybody. Like, luckily we had an out. We're like, well, we have a conflict, so it doesn't matter whether or not we agree. I personally didn't think the QS ad was that big a deal. You can read into that what you want, if that's me being biased because I write for QS and really like QS. But we really didn't have to have the debate. There was a conflict. We couldn't really be on MTG Cast anymore with that QS ad. So we are basically, our podcast, each new episode is going to go up Fridays on Gathering Magic. And that's basically the one place our podcasts are now. But there's talk of a site called Mana Echoes hosting some casts. We might actually be able to go back to MTG Cast someday. And we're working on getting our episodes up on our own website a little faster, because we want to give Gathering Magic a week of exclusivity. But after that, there are some people that only know about our website. Mm-hmm. Like, we could say it at the beginning of every podcast and people are still going to be like, hey, you guys haven't done a new podcast in 3 weeks. Well, yeah, we have. No, I've been on your website. And we're like, wow, people still, like, we haven't really updated the website in a long time. And Marcel was looking at the metrics of how many people like visited our site last month, and it was a lot. So I think what we need to do is, we're planning on actually making our website more of a destination website and not just a place to host our podcast episodes a week late.
So are you indicating that you might have like articles and maybe, you know, some streaming, or like, what do you mean by that? It's like, what are you looking?
I don't know if, if we were talking about this publicly yet, but that's fine. Let's get some enthusiasm about it. Articles are a real possibility.
Okay.
So, like, we have three writers already, you know, we write for other websites, and we have kind of people that we have associated with the Brainstorm Brewery brand. Such as PTQ winner Ray Perez, who is, you know, has article writing experience and who really just grinds this game super hard. And I think he has a real good perspective about gameplay. So, yeah, we're probably going to have articles here very soon. It would be a good place to get our tokens and stuff like that instead of having to contact us. And really, when people just get our token that says Brainstorm Brewery on it, they're like, all right, they type that into Google. The first thing that comes up isn't Gathering Magic. You know, the first thing is our website. So that's why we're getting visits. So I'd like to make our website an actual thing.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier in the show when you guys started, you know, the brewery, that, you know, the reason why it started was because there was no finance show out there. And I can certainly relate to wanting to do something different and wanting to give people, you know, something that they can't find anywhere else. But since Brainstorm Brewery got started, it does seem like other people are hopping on the finance bandwagon, where even if the site isn't solely devoted to finance, like Quiet Speculation, they're still making sure that they're filling that niche somehow. So, for example, Star City has their finance people now, and Channel Fireball has a finance guy or two now, and you know, everybody's trying
to. Do they?
I believe they do, yeah.
I wasn't aware Channel Fireball did, because they never really replaced Chaz Andrus, who is now Star City's finance writer.
I could be wrong, but I can certainly go back and look at that. I'm fairly sure I saw an article that covered it. It might have been a one-off. It might not have been like a consistent thing, but I do recall reading numbers tossed around there. But what I was trying to get at, though, Jason, is if you guys were to, you know, develop Brainstorm Brewery, the site, how would you guys compete with everybody else who's now trying to get in on this, too?
Well, I don't know that we have to necessarily compete, because,
or set yourselves apart.
I think that's, you know, basically what we do, because we were the first, mm-hmm. you know, finance podcast. And I think, God, I don't want to say anything that sounds like, oh, we're the number one name of finance, just anything stupid like that. I think the odds of somebody knowing about Brainstorm Brewery are maybe lower, but the odds of somebody knowing about finance and really getting into finance and never coming across us are pretty low.
Right.
So even though we're niche, I think we're positioned that we're one of those podcasts that people have heard about. We don't just get people who are interested in finance listening to us. Mm-hmm. You know, people tell me like, well, you guys are entertaining, so you're in my rotation. I think we try to be entertaining enough that people who want to listen to a lot of podcasts and just have, like, you know, that 7 or 8 or 9 podcasts they listen to make work less miserable on a Friday. Mm-hmm. that's great. We love to be in that rotation. It's an honor for us to not just have finance people listening to our podcast. But as far as finance goes, I'm hoping that we are big enough now, or will be big enough soon, that you won't be able to think MTG Finance without at least talking to someone who knows about us. So I think we're probably going to get a decent portion of the people interested in finance wanting to frequent our site. Why not have it be a rotation? You don't just read articles on one website if it's about modern or about EDH or legacy or standard. So why not come to our website to read some finance articles, and you can still read the finance articles everywhere else. It's good to get a good sampling.
Yeah, I definitely think there's enough room for everybody, and I appreciate your ambition. And if you guys do end up developing the site a bit more, I'm always happy to retweet you and then show you guys some promotional love.
Really appreciate that. What I started writing about on Gathering Magic, if I can just go off topic, because that's what I do.
Kinda. Of course.
I started writing articles. I'm a real late adopter of Twitter. Mm-hmm. So when I finally saw the value of Twitter, I was like, I need to tell everybody about this. Because I just know there were people that were like me. It's like, oh, great, Twitter. Someone's taking a picture of their lunch. Who gives a fuck? You know, that's kind of what I thought it was at first.
Right.
And my buddy's like, no, you can follow porn stars and comedians and stuff like that. I'm like, that's cool and all, but what's Twitter for? And then when I realized, like, people retweet each other's articles and like get finance discussions going, and people who write behind paywalls will give you the same information for free that is behind that paywall. And that blew my mind. And I was like, okay, you need it's not just about following people that can give you information. It's about networking and making friends. It's funny. Like, there are people that I had 3 months worth of conversations with on Twitter, and then I finally met them in person. I'm like, this seems backward. You know, shouldn't you meet before your pen pals? But it's not the way Twitter works. So it's been really good. And I really think everybody should be on Twitter if they aren't.
Yeah. The networking is definitely what blows my mind sometimes. Like, if you really think about it, and I tend to think of Twitter in terms of like the big picture. So, for example, you mentioned TSG a little earlier, and TSG has over 3,000 followers last time I looked at them. And, you know, when I first started doing my show and I would, you know, I would have people on, you know, they'd have a couple followers, like 100 or 200 or whatever. And then when they hit retweet, if you think about it, they're exposing your name to their 100 or 200 people. And then if any of those 200 like you, and let's say that person has 75, they're then retweeting you to 75 different people. So when you have somebody like TSG that's on your show and he's retweeting your show, he's exposing you to 3,000 people. Like, that's insane. Like, that's a huge slice of pie that you have the chance to get in on. And then, you know, if anybody he follows likes that show, they're going to retweet it to their, because he does follow some big people, another 1,000 people have seen you. And when you really think about it, you know, there could be like thousands or tens of thousands of people who see you every week or have the opportunity to be exposed to you. And that's just mind-blowing. It's like, wow, like, who would have thought that we would ever have that reach? And just when I think I have it like figured out, or I think I understand the depths of it, it's even bigger. And it's like, wow. And it's just, I can't quite grasp it sometimes.
And Twitter's free and it's accessible. And it's a wonderful tool.
Yeah. So another thing that you're known for on Gathering Magic, you recently started this series where you were recommending people on Twitter that you think other people should follow. And you did like a podcast column or a podcast article, and then you did like a deck builder one. And it was very interesting to me to see how passionate people were when they saw that you didn't recommend their people that they enjoy, whether or not you didn't recommend their shows or the people themselves. And I wasn't expecting that kind of fallout. Was that something that you saw coming?
Me either. Okay, so I'm writing an article called Who to Follow. You'd think people would see the value in me saying, hey, there's somebody that I think you should follow. I'm following them. Here's the value of this person. Mm-hmm. And God forbid it's somebody they don't know already. Mm-hmm. I think what people – it's probably a vocal minority, I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. That's like – I had one person say in the comments of when I – talked about people on TCG Player to follow. They're like, yeah, you know, one of these guys is pretty good, but the rest of them are nobodies. I'm like, nobody meaning you haven't heard of them already? Like, why would you not see the value in me exposing you to someone you haven't heard of already? Mm-hmm. That blew my mind. And then when I did the podcast one, people were like, I can't believe you didn't mention the A-Team. So that kind of rustled by Jimmy's a little, so I kind of spent the next 2 weeks trolling people and like talking about, like, the next week I was like, I could mention the A-Team here, and I didn't, and people went ballistic that second time. They're like, this is the second time you mentioned the A-Team and did give them a write-up? I'm like, well, you already know about the A-Team.
Right.
That's what blew my mind. I was like, but you were such a fan of the A-Team that you're a little upset that I didn't mention them, but you want me to tell you about them? So I think what I didn't anticipate was the sense of validation people get when they see people they know recommended by someone. Mm-hmm. They're like, I follow that guy on Twitter already, and this guy is saying this person has value. I'm smart. I figured out ahead of time that I should be following this person. So I write now with that sense of validation people feel in mind. I try to give a nice mix of like, well, here's someone you're familiar with. Maybe here's some of their work you're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And then here's some people that I like on a personal level, or I feel like I discovered maybe, or just, oh God, not discovered. It sounds so pretentious, doesn't it? I reached into the trash can and I found Anthony Lowry. After only 10,000 other, yeah, before 10,000 other people already knew about him. And he's been writing forever. Yeah, so I didn't discover anybody. I'm not a talent scout. But, like, somebody that people really, I think, should know more about. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of that. And to have Adrian Sullivan tell me that I got him 100 new followers blew my mind. I'm like, who hasn't heard of Adrian Sullivan?
Right.
It's not that. It's people that knew Adrian Sullivan. Like, I like Adrian Sullivan. Oh, this reminded me I'm not following him on Twitter, and I probably should be, because you can't follow everybody. Your right. feed would just explode. But even if I make the case for people already know about, you know, it sort of tells them like, all right, you know, I know this guy. I like this guy, but you're right. Maybe I should give them a follow on Twitter. And then sometimes there are people that, you know, aren't getting a lot of exposure and I think should. And that works too.
It's also interesting when the validation comes from the people themselves. Like, I've had people, I mean, my Twitter, you know, follower count has blown up a little bit since I've been on Legit MTG. I'm close to 1,300 now. And it's funny, like, when people follow me and they enjoy my show, and I'll banter with them, and I like them enough to follow them, and I still can't get over the reaction of the people who are afterwards like, oh my God, Original Estrus is following me. And then, like, they'll favorite it and highlight it and screenshot it. And I'm just like, what's the big deal? Like, it's just me. We're just kikiing. We're having a good time. What's the issue? And you know, it's so crazy when people have those fan moments where they're like, you know, I can't believe you're following me. And it's like, well, why wouldn't I follow you? Like, what do you think, you're not worthy of being followed? And it's weird. Like, I get that people want the validation to know that they're following the right people, but I think people also want the validation of knowing that they're good enough to be followed. And that's a very interesting thing for me. I've never really, and I feel that way too. Like, I know when Darwin Castle first started following me, I was like, okay, Darwin Castle is following you. Don't say anything stupid. Just don't. It's dark. Oh God, you're going to say something stupid. And I felt the same way. And then Helene Bergio started following me, and I was like, Helene fucking Bergio is following me. And I still get that too. I still get that little twinge of knowing that this person is someone, capital S, they're following me, and I'm not necessarily a someone, and it feels really good. And that's a unique feeling too. And I definitely feel that sometimes.
So. I mean, yeah, I still get that too. And I would say a lot of the capital S someone's following me, I would say a good portion of that probably came from writing Who to Follow. Yeah. I've gotten a lot of follow backs from people that read that. They're like, oh, this was a nice write-up. Mm-hmm. I've had very few negative reactions. Mm-hmm. I've had like one catastrophic negative reaction I don't even want to talk about. But the, like, sometimes people don't even acknowledge, they don't retweet, don't say anything, don't acknowledge it. And like, I don't expect them to, but it's still like, I'm not holding a grudge, but I remember every single person who's never said anything. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, I don't expect anything, but at the same time, it's like, you could have at least retweeted. But not everybody is as super active on Twitter.
Well, that's something I find kind of disappointing as well. And I've started kind of vocalizing this a little bit, but it's like, you know, I have a lot of people who enjoy my show, and I have managed to. I did recently create my own Twitter account for my show, and I'm up to almost 100 followers there, which is nice. And I definitely get a lot of positive feedback, like when shows come out. But I feel like people who don't do this seriously don't understand what kind of feedback really counts. So, like, for example, if somebody really, really, really likes the show, go on Stitcher and give it a thumbs up, because if I get higher up the Stitcher list, Stitcher might promote me a little bit more, and then the show is more successful, and that's a good thing. Or if they really, really like the show, go on iTunes, leave me a couple stars. That means the more stars that I get, the more reviews that I get, I can be on iTunes' front page, because there's three sliders for the other game section, which means more exposure, which means more people will know me, which means I can probably get bigger guests on the show. And it's not that I don't appreciate, you know, the random tweet or the random email, but I do wish sometimes that the listeners knew what really makes more of a difference. And I do try to like steer them towards those things, and it just doesn't always work. So I know what you mean about wishing sometimes you got more retweets or wishing you got more affirmation, because those things really do count. And I wish people knew that. So I met you this past weekend at a little place called Gen Con. And I was actually, again, very surprised that you approached me, Jason, because I didn't think you'd know who I was. And I didn't think, I have to admit, I had like an image of you in my mind, and you were so not what I thought you would be in a good way. And you ended up being a really great guy, and I had a lot of fun hanging out with you this weekend when I did get to see you. But I kind of wanted to talk about what we did this past weekend, who we ran into, what we experienced, what we thought of the show. So hopefully you are willing to walk down memory lane with me tonight.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So let's kick things off. Gathering Magic Party. It's where you and I met. Kilroy's Bar. What did you enjoy about the party? Did you have a good time?
Yeah. It was great. I went last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, around Gen Con, I had been writing for Gathering Magic for exactly a week. So nobody knew me. I'd written one article, you know, or two. And I was sort of like, oh, hey. And, I'd read a lot of Gathering Magic articles. So I knew a lot of people that wrote there, but there were some people associated with the site that I didn't necessarily know from reading articles that I got to meet. That was cool. So the year before, it was sort of like two or three tables. We were kind of right next to the kitchen, so the waitresses were like constantly coming right by us. It was hard to hear. Adam Staborski this year actually was like, okay, we want this to be big. We're going to have everybody put it on Facebook and tell all their friends about it. Let's get this big. He rented out the entire back section. We spill it out into the patio. We spill it out deeper into the bar. We were there for 4 or 5 hours, I think, in total. It was a much bigger party this year. He actually got sort of like a food area set up, as opposed to just getting a few plates of appetizers last year. I hope it's even bigger. You know, I hope this party grows exponentially, because it's just a great way for all the Gathering Magic writers to meet each other in person, first of all, and then like anybody that likes Gathering Magic to meet the writers and, you know, meet people like Eric Klug, who was there doing tokens. And
he's really cute. Throwing that out there. Go on.
Well, I don't know how to respond to that. There's no way not to insult one of you, right? So it's like, okay.
That's true. Yeah, the Gathering Magic Party was a lot of fun. I didn't get to go last year because, like I said, my show was just starting out. I didn't know who any of these people were. I had literally just gotten off the bus. I took a 4-hour Greyhound from Milwaukee to Indianapolis, and I was staying at the Hampton Inn, which was just down the street from Kilroy's, and my friend had met me at the bus station. We dropped off my suitcase, threw on another coat of eyeliner, freshened up the mascara, and went. ran into Helene Bergio and Adrian Sullivan on the way there. Helene hugged me, and then told me that I had some of the softest hands she'd ever felt. So I spent a couple minutes just feeling her up.
There you go.
Above the waist, of course, and in no dirty spots, but she really enjoyed my hands. So it was just like, oh, it's an excuse to touch Helene Bergio. And then I went into the party. I kind of thought the party was going to – I didn't know anybody at first glance, or at least I thought I didn't. I didn't see anybody that I obviously knew. I admit that I was a little cranky just getting off the bus, and I was just like, I don't see anybody. I don't know anybody. I'm going to go. And I know. And then Helene actually called me over and started, and then Real Evil Genius was there. And then from him, it led to you, which led to Ms. Red Mage, which led to Zach White, which led to and just this cascade effect of people that I really did know, and I just happened to not recognize. And then there were just so many people there where there's no way I could have left. So,
yeah, like that was a great way to start the weekend.
Yeah,
it was a great way last year, and it was even better this year. It was just a real successful party. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. So if you're at Gen Con next year, I'm sure we're doing it again. That's probably something you'll want to experience.
I think the other cool thing about it was when the mundanes, as I call them, saw what was happening and wanted to get involved. So Eric Klug was...
Is that a Fables reference?
No, I used to play a game called Vampire the Masquerade. And they used to call people that weren't playing or like spectators, they would call them mundanes. So one of the things I really liked about the party was a couple people, there were two groups that were cubing. There was Prozac and Friends, and they were cubing. And then Eric Klug had a zombie human cube, and we were all cubing on the patio. And it was really cool to see people who wouldn't normally identify as geeks or who don't normally have an interest in this come up and be like, what you doing? And they'd get interested and they'd want to know what was going on, and they would ask what cards did. And it's always cool when you can sort of rope people in like that. And they were genuinely interested, and they'd want to know, and you'd maybe give them an email address. You'd give them like a free card to show them what was what. And it was cool to see them kind of take over and us to be the cool kids for once and to see the cool and have the cool kids be interested in what we do. That was really nice. And I really enjoyed that part.
Well, 5 days a year the nerds take over Indianapolis.
That's
so true. You either you venture out and see what they're up to, or you just stay in your home and hope the nerds leave and don't leave the city in too much disrepair on
board
their way
up
out
the house. Actually, it's funny though, I did play Eric zombie human cube. I didn't really care for the cube that much. I'm not really a cube expert, but do you know about the zombie human cube?
I do. Dedicated readers of GatheringMagic.com will be a little bit more familiar with that cube.
Are you writing about it?
No.
Okay.
But he has, I think, on occasion, and Adam Staborski is a big proponent of that cube as well. So.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. I felt like the zombies were very overpowered compared
to
humans.
It's tough to balance. The zombies are supposed to be OP, I think.
Okay.
Like, it's supposed to be tough for the humans to win.
Okay.
Not like the real zombie apocalypse where the humans just don't stand a chance.
Oh, yeah, I kind of felt like the zombies had a lot of lords. And from what I could see, the lords were very general. So it was like all zombies get +1/+1 or all zombies get +2/+1. And I feel like the lords that the humans had were very specific, where it was like all clerics get something or all soldiers get something. And there wasn't really like an all white creatures or all humans. And, you know, when you're able to play such cheap creatures that immediately have these anthem effects out, there's just really no competing with that. And you know, you're throwing these little like 1/1 tokens at them and they're not doing anything. And it was a bit of a bummer. So that was really the only feedback that I had for it. So
It's going to be tough to balance something like that, but
it was a lot of fun though. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great seeing Sam Black play humans.
that seems uncharacteristic of him.
It was very uncharacteristic, but he was a good sport. He sat through it. Caleb Durward was the Durward, right? Durward. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You do know who Caleb is, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I've never thought there was another way to pronounce his name.
Maybe it's just
now me. I'm self-conscious of like maybe I'm like every time I say hey I've you know mentioned Caleb Durward, everyone rolls their eyes like it's Durward, idiot. This guy doesn't even know him. Hey, Durward. Yeah, I don't know, now I'm self-conscious. Way to go.
I've given you a complex. This is awesome. All right, so Thursday, the actual first day of Gen Con, what did you do on Thursday?
I did it wrong.
What?
Okay, see, I'm a Magic player. So when you're a Magic player, you go into the TCG hall and you go, give me $90 worth of generic tickets, please. And they print out $90 worth of generic tickets and you go, bye, this will last me one booster draft. And you skip off over in the Magic area and you...
You skip?
Sure. It's the fastest land locomotion possible. It's faster than power walking. No, so... Yeah, you go play Magic and they just take generic tickets. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that the rest of Gen Con was a little bit less loosey-goosey than that. So the first day on Thursday, we showed up and we're like, we want to learn to play Munchkin. And they're like, all right, we got a thing starting in a little bit. Do you have a specific event ticket? We're like, no. And they're like, you need a specific event ticket. That's how you register for the thing. How do I get that? You buy it online 6 months ago. We went,
so what?
We're like, this sucks. We went over and got a bunch of generic tickets. And the rest of the weekend, anytime we wanted to do an event where there were specific event tickets, half the people that registered didn't show up. So there are people like, I registered for this 6 months ago. And then like, cool, so did some other guy. And they didn't show up. So there are people like, I tried to get into this 6 months ago and it was full. Just go. Because, you know, a bunch of people aren't going to show up. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we lucked out with the generic tickets, and there were a lot of places that, you know, previewed the games for free, so that was cool. We didn't play any real big events. We just wanted to be exposed to as many games as we possibly could. Mm-hmm. So we just board games the whole time.
Yeah.
We, you know, played card games and board games. I learned how to play Kaijudo.
What'd you think of that?
It's quick.
Yeah.
When you can't block, like, the game goes real fast. I'm not a big fan of using the cards in your hand as mana, but it's interesting. It's a decent way to balance the game. I know, like, games like Versus System did it that way too, where you're, you know, a card in your hand was either mana or a card for later, so you could ramp to the big stuff. But not being able to block is kind of awkward, but.
So wait a minute. So there's no, I've never played the game. So I'm a little
There are some creatures with blockers, but like essentially you take the top five cards of your library and you put them out and those are shields. And once all the shields are broken, like the next time you get hit, you're dead.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. You basically just swing at each other. The power number on the creature only matters for combat. It doesn't matter for shield breaking or killing your opponent. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to deal them 10,000 damage. You just have to hit them once when their shields are gone. Mm-hmm. So when the shields break, you get that card back in your hand. And that's about all there is to it. There are very few creatures that can block.
Right.
So for the most part, you're like, I swing at your shield, I swing at your shield. And there's summoning sickness, and you can attack directly their tapped creatures.
Wow.
To keep them from hitting you again. So that's the way
crazy.
To keep the board clear. Yeah, it's other than that, it's real simple.
Mm. Like, I'll have to give it a try.
Like, there are control-y type stuff, and there's aggro-y type stuff, just like everything, you know, every other game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit simpler than Magic. Mm-hmm. And right now, the tournaments just seem real loose. Like, my buddy John Johnson was kind of got swept up in the hysteria surrounding Jerry T. Jerry T's trying to get everybody he knows playing Kaijudo. Probably two. Probably not instead of Magic. Probably in addition to Magic.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Jerry T's real big about Kaijudo. And he got John Johnson interested, and then John got me interested. So John was looking at results from tournaments. He's like, you have to play a 40-card minimum deck. Some guy who won a tournament was running 49. This game seems pretty loose. Maybe it's like the first year of Magic where, there's got to be a secondary market for Kaijudo, so... I can already sell those cards on TCG Player, so if Kaijudo's big, fine, that's better for me. I can learn another game to the extent that, like, I can metagame a little bit and know what's going to go up and do a little bit of Kaijudo finance.
Do you see Kaijudo having legs?
It's got Wizards of the Coast behind it.
True.
Like, I think it's a better game than Yu-Gi-Oh!
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about Yu-Gi-Oh!, but just from hearing... trying to have the game explained to me once versus learning Kaijudo in 5 minutes. I think Kaijudo is a game for the under 15s and Jerry Thompson. I don't think Magic players are going to be able to stay away when they're like, oh, it's a bunch of 15-year-olds and then Kaijudo world's winner Jerry Thompson who won $35,000 in Orlando, Florida. And everyone's going to go, well, fuck, I'll play Kaijudo too. Screw that. It's not like Jerry have all the fun. So I think eventually Magic players will take over and ruin it.
Right.
But not ruin it, but they'll just game it. Like, it's not going to be loose. In a year, there's going to be 10 former Magic pros that are also playing Kaijudo, and the top eight is going to be, you know, 10 Magic pros, or right. 8 Magic pros in the top eight. They're all going to have 40-card decks. It's all going to be optimized. So I like that the game's loose right now. It's a little bit more fun. It's the Wild West. But eventually... gamers are going to game, and it's going to get, optimized.
Right. The only thing I did on Thursday was I played a standard for sets. I didn't do very well. I was a little annoyed. I had 5 people draw into the top 8, and I was like, that's a little okay. So I was a little annoyed about that, and then I had some friends of mine that were in town, and they wanted to play Commander with me. And it took me a little time to actually find them, but we had a really good time playing Commander. Brandon Eastlib from Gathering Magic, he actually built me my Commander deck. I have an Omnath deck, and I don't get to play Commander as much as I might like, and we had so much fun, and it was, to me, they play Commander the way that I feel the Commander should be. I don't like competitive Commander. I don't like people who try to, like, make ultimate combos to go off at like, you know, turn six or whatever. I just don't like that. And this was one of those games where everybody just wanted to live the dream, where, you know, if you could sacrifice Omnath to a momentous fall and get off a whirlwind or whatever, good on you, you know. And it was just a really good time, and we were all just really goofy, and people saw us having fun, so they wanted to see what was going on. And it was a really good way to end the day, because I was really stressed from the event I had played at, and then to just, you know, to end the day eating nachos and playing Commander and, you know, laughing at Mimeoplasm going off or whatever was a lot of fun. So that was a good time. I had fun with that. So how was your Friday?
Friday was, you know, a little bit more of the same. Okay, so I didn't stay at a hotel. My brother lives in Indianapolis.
Nice.
So I got to stay at his place for free while he's out of town.
Oh.
So that meant we got to take our dog and not have to kennel the dog. Mm-hmm. But we did, you know, around Friday afternoon be like, yeah, we should go home and check on the dog. So what we ended up doing was we did most of a full day, and we left a little early, went and, you know, let the dog out. And then we went back, actually, which, you know, you get to pay $14 in parking again, but it was worth it because Rob Dougherty and Darwin Castle actually developed a very Ascension-esque game called mm-hmm. Star Realms, and yeah. they were previewing it for people. And I was one of the people that got to preview the game, and it cool. was fantastic. I'll let everybody know about the Kickstarter for that, because I think people should get on it. Basically, it's Ascension, but it's the core gameplay of Ascension, and none of the superfluous stuff.
Can I tell you something?
Go ahead.
I didn't do the demo because Darwin wasn't there. Oh. I know. I love Darwin. I just couldn't do it. So.
Yeah. Darwin's cool. Rob's a cool guy, actually. I met him a few times when he was, like, judging events up in Canada. Mm-hmm. And the wife and I had a really good time playing Star Realms. So, yeah, the game actually, I had high hopes for it just because it sounded cool. It's like a space dogfight. But it actually played a lot better than I thought. Instead of, like, using your attack to kill monsters and get their effects and kill the cultists with your leftover attack power, all of it just goes to your opponent's life total. Mm-hmm. So there's life gain and direct damage.
Nice.
I think it's just a strict upgrade to Ascension. Mm-hmm. Like, it all fits in a deck box, and if you want to play with four players, you just add another deck. It's going to be $15, which I think is super compared to Ascension, which is like, I think, 120.
Yeah.
No, it's like, you know, 30, 40, 50
yeah,
for Ascension. But like, $15 is a great price point just for a game people can play between rounds at an event, and it fits up in a deck box.
Right. Are there expansions to that game, or is it just you pay the $15 and those are all the cards?
I think there are planned expansions.
Okay.
It's ready to go right out of the box, but expansions will only just make the game better. And again, you can probably just shuffle stuff in. I mean, Rob was saying, Rob, like we're on a first name basis now.
Totally.
I should have to call him Mr. Dougherty and like bow meekly. Oh, sorry, Mr. Dougherty. Screw it. It's Rob, all right? So Rob was telling me they, like, with more expansions, you can probably build a cube if you want.
That's cool.
EDH is a possibility. Emperor is a possibility. Like, anything you could do with Magic or, like, Ascension. And probably more than you can do with Ascension, you could do with Star Realms. So I've been just, every time someone will let me talk about that game, I have, because I loved it. And I'm definitely supporting the Kickstarter.
Now I feel bad for not trying it out. You'll have to. I will definitely check out the Kickstarter when you plug it, because now I'm interested.
Well, you just make a big deal out of like saying you won't get interested until Darwin Castle personally Skypes with you or something like that. I think that's probably a possibility.
I love Darwin Castle.
Yeah, he's the man. He's one of those people that like I just found an excuse to do a whole to follow about him.
Mm-hmm.
I like built the whole article about people I could relate to him a little bit. That was,
right.
Yeah, he's one of my like I grew up reading Duelist magazine, you know, back in like the late
90s. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I've been a fan of Darwin Castle before, you know, I knew about any of the pros who are big now. So,
right.
Yeah, it was like hearing he was working on the game was exciting to me.
Yeah. So my Friday was pretty action-packed. I started off the day doing a true dungeon with Gavin Verhey, and this was my repentance for turning him down last year for true dungeon. He asked me last year to do one, and I didn't really know who he was. Like, I was just starting out, so we had just mm-hmm. I just figured out who he was, and it was my first time coming back to Gen Con, and I turned... He was like, hey, you want to do true dungeon with me and some wizards folks? And me being a noob, I was like, I have a winner box, Gavin Verhey. I can't. And I turned Gavin right. hay down for
well,
a standard.
Well, no, no, you prioritize the winter box. Probably already paid for.
But I never really, no, I had generic tickle. Yeah, I guess you could say that. But I never really lived that down, at least in, you know, to myself. I felt really bad about it. So when Gavin Verhey put out the Facebook call that he had some tickets, I was like, I'm in. Like, I don't care what the challenge is. I don't care what time it is. It's Gavin Verhey. You fucking go. So right. Friday we went, and I was surprised because he didn't know that many people. Like, most of the group wasn't even friends of his. And I wasn't able to play the class that I wanted to play. I'm really good at being a cleric. Somebody had already chosen the cleric, so I was like, well, I came here to be smart and heal, so why don't I just be dumb and hit things? I'll be the barbarian. So we turned things around a little bit. We actually didn't do that well. We had a lot of new people with us. We also had some people who had done it a number of times, and you know, they were upset that nobody was listening to them. We had the new people that felt frustrated that nobody was really telling them what to do. You know, we struggled with really every challenge, and it didn't help either that I had the Team Trios event, so I was really pressed for time. And I just couldn't really enjoy it as much as I wanted to. So the True Dungeon wasn't that great, but Team Trios was a lot of fun. Have you ever played Team Trios?
I have. I think it was the Saviors of Kamigawa pre-release.
Okay. So much fun. So much fun. I got to do it with John Douglas, who's my editor at Legit, and we picked up a friend named Tom, who was so much fun. I don't know if you met Tom at all throughout the shenanigans, but he was a lot of fun, and we did it. And it was interesting, because I'm a really big fan of Two at a Giant, and I had assumed that this was going to be a lot like that, and it really wasn't. The only time that we really communicated was during deck building. Like, once we actually got to playing, there wasn't the usual, like, show them your hand, whisper in their ear, what should I do? We were really on our own for that part once the play started.
You can, but then you're, like, disrupting their game.
Yeah.
Everyone feels awkward about that. It's like, hey, four people, stop because I have a question. Because you really are holding up four people.
Yeah, but I was okay with that. And we built three decks. We built three really strong decks. Tom was basically Sliver Guy. Let's be honest. We gave him all the slivers, had a good time. I filled the role of Mono Blue Girl, because what more do you need other than blue? And then John was playing Black, Red, Sacrifice, all the things. So he had, like, the Vampire Warlords, Active Treasons, all that nonsense. So we ended up doing really well. We were 3-1, and then we split our winnings. We opened a Scavenging Ooze. We opened a Fiend Slayer Paladin. We had a really good time. It was a lot of fun. The thing I really liked the most about that format was the idea that whatever team gets their two wins first that's it. So there were times where, like, I would be 2-0, and then you're waiting, and you're like, all right, which one of those guys? They're both at 1-1. And then the minute somebody, you know, breaks that tie, the third person doesn't even need to keep going. So, like, let's say you go to game three, and your partners already win, you're done. You can literally just fold and be like, that was cool. And that was cool. That definitely added some tension to things. But, oh, God, I hope they get there. Oh, and that was a lot of fun. I was a little mad, though. I did lose to a young Pyromancer deck.
It happens.
Young Pyromancer and Molten Birth.
Oh.
I was pissed.
You keep winning the dice roll?
Basically, he kept flipping that, and he'd be like, oh, make two more tokens, and then, you know, the Pyromancer would do, and he had multiple Pyromancers and multiple Molten Births, and I was like, oh, come on, and I was so embarrassed. And
well, how many packs did you get?
12, and you had to make three decks out of that.
12 packs, that's a lot of chances to get Molten Births and Young Pyromancers.
I know, I was very ashamed. But we still did very well. I was very happy with my guys. We had a really good time. Saturday, what did you do on Saturday?
Okay, so we screwed up, and it ended up actually not turning out that bad.
Uh-oh.
So we played a Discworld-based board game. Okay. Discworld being the series of Terry Pratchett novels.
Okay.
We played a board game, and we kind of liked it. So we're like, you know what? What time are we going to go Saturday? Can we sleep in? And we looked through the catalog, and there was a game that said it was a Discworld game Saturday morning at 8 a.m. And we're like, okay, well, we like that other Discworld game, so maybe this will be fun. And we just didn't look at anything. If I'd looked at anything, I would have seen it was 5 hours, and that would have been a clue. And I also would have seen it was Hero System, and I would have like, I have the internet at my fingertips as a phone owner. Why don't I look up what the Hero System is? Had I done that, I would have seen it was a D6-based role-playing system. And I would have gone, maybe I don't want to play a D&D-esque role-playing game for 5 hours, starting at 8 in the morning, based on lore I knew nothing about. But we went, and as soon as we showed up, we knew exactly what was up. We were walking down the hall, and it said, RPGs, like on every surface, and I was like, I hope this isn't an RPG. And then we walk in the room, there's two big circular tables and clearly a DM, and I was like, all right, this is happening. So I just had such a loosey-goosey weekend up until that point. I was like, you know what, screw it, let's do it. And it actually was a lot of fun. Because I've played D&D before, but my wife hadn't, and I was like, maybe she'll hate this. That would suck. I'd feel bad for not doing any research and just saying, oh, Discworld, yeah, that's all we need to know. Let's show up. So it actually turned out well. She didn't hate it, so that was good. We had some fun, and then the rest of Saturday, we just played some more board games.
Nice. So Saturday for me was the TCG 1K. I wasn't even sure I wanted to do it, and they were expecting a bigger turnout, obviously, because they were awarding prizes down to top 32. And as luck would have it, I think 33 people signed up or 34 people signed up.
How'd you like to be that 33rd guy? I just dropped at 02 and didn't stick around, waiting for the fight. Ooh, I hope I'm 32nd.
Yes.
You're 0-4, buddy.
Yeah, so you could basically play anything you wanted to and got up and received a playmat, basically. And it was a really good time. And the more I was telling people, like, it was $30 to join. And then when I would tell people, like, you know, what the odds were, people were like, I should have done that. And yeah, you really should have. And I ended up making top 8, which I was proud of. I realized there were only 33 people, but still, for me to make top 8, I was pretty proud of myself. And until I actually started playing in the top 8, which led to me, oh, you know, telling my opponent to die in a fire and telling the judge he wasn't the boss of me. Yeah.
Is that an ideal outcome? I don't really know. Like, that's how I get down when I play.
Well, I suffer from some tilting issues, and here's the problem. So I got to top 8. First round of top 8, I play this guy. And he's starting to play like some Bant type lands. So he's playing a Breeding Pool. He's doing that whole thing. Too many turns go by for it to be Bant hexproof. So I'm thinking it's Bant control, something like that. Turn 4 or 5 rolls around and he plays an acidic slime. I'm like, okay, he destroys one of my swamps. Okay, I don't have enough swamps to do a mutilate now because I have my guild gates and my cemeteries or whatever. And then he goes, next turn, he goes, evil twin, acidic slime. And I'm like, what? Uh-oh. Oh, no. Destroys another land. And I'm like, oh, God, no. So I respond with a Doomblade or some other kind of targeted, you know, targeted removal. Simic Charm. My slime is hexproof.
And oh, I'm no.
Like, this is not a deck. Come on. Then a couple turns later, Progenitor Mimic. And I'm like, oh, come on. To get to the top 8, to fight your way to the top 8 with a respectable deck, and then losing to clone slimes in Hexproof, I was pissed. So I was so shitty towards him, and I was just not happy, and I was bitching up a storm and telling him how, you know, embarrassed I was for him and everything like that. And then he did beat me, because I couldn't do anything. It was just so stupid, and the judge didn't like that I was sort of being snarky to him. So as I lost, as I was filling out my sheet, the opponent goes, well, good luck. And I told him to die in a fire. And the judge didn't like that. And the judge said something to the effect of, don't roll over your opponent, Aaron. And at that point, I had already signed the slip. And I was like, I'm not in your event anymore. You don't get to tell me what to do. Like, we're not doing this. And I was pissed. I was tilting. I was not happy. And I stormed away. And I was pissed, you know? Like, I would have been less angry losing to Jund or less angry losing to Naya or even Bant Hexproof, for God's sakes. But to get that far and play 6 or 7 rounds and you lose to Acidic Slime deck, I wasn't having it. And it just, I don't know. I probably could have handled it better, but I wasn't happy. And yeah,
I think I was in a similar place. I think I don't know that I told anyone to die in a fire necessarily, but I think when you expect to win, you feel like you hate losing. As
I didn't
opposed
expect to win.
Love...
I just expected there to be. I mean, sure, how do you come up against acidic slime hexproof? Like, what do you sideboard in for that? How do you deal with that? Like, what do you?
Oh well, if they didn't do anything before turn 5, you just, I don't know. Like, certain decks beat certain decks, and if you had no gas in your deck, then maybe it wasn't the worst deck to be playing. It sounds really slow. Like, I don't know how he top 8ed in a format where there's like red green and stuff like that, but if they can make the game go long enough, they have inevitability, and that feels really bad.
Yeah.
So I think if you're at a place when you don't love winning and you start to hate losing, like, I don't
it's
know.
It's a weird in between.
The cure for me, I think, was just not playing for the longest time, and I only play like pre-releases and casual now. I'll play the occasional booster draft, but I don't grind like PTQs and that sort of thing anymore. And like, I'll play the occasional event, but really, I don't know. Like, I like everything about the game except playing competitively. Mm-hmm. So when you start to hate losing more than you love winning, maybe do something else. Maybe play some EDH. You know, Gen Con's a great place for it, because if you get tilted and frustrated, you just push yourself away from the table and go do something else. And
yeah,
there's a million games to play and a million cool people to meet. So Gen Con was definitely it's a good place to just sort of, I didn't play any Magic. I really mm-hmm. didn't.
Yeah.
You know, the wife was with me. She plays EDH with me, but she's, you know, not super experienced at Magic. So we didn't play, I didn't play Two to Giant, nothing. Mm-hmm. Two to Giant might have been fun. For as bad as Sunday was, there was a two-headed giant at 10 a.m. that we didn't sign up for. And then there was like another one at 2, but we wanted to just leave it too. Uh-huh. So next year if we go, which we should, I'm thinking Sunday, the fact that everyone's tearing down super early, like way earlier than they should be allowed to. Sunday's a good day to play Magic, I think, if you're going to. And two-headed giant is like my format. The winner of the first Ascension Worlds Tournament, Aaron the Godslayer Sula, is actually another one of Ryan Bouchard and my friends from Lansing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's funny. Like, everyone's like, oh, do you know Ascension? I'm like, well, the Godslayer performed my wedding ceremony.
Who gets to say that?
True story. The Godslayer performed my wedding ceremony. So, wow. Yeah. So Aaron and I actually, Aaron was my two-headed giant partner forever. And when they were actually doing states and PTQs and stuff like that, we top fored states and top four to PTQ the same year. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I was third in the state of Michigan for two-headed giant sealed.
Wow.
Cause we just got like just a million points. That was back before Planeswalker points. Mm-hmm. So my rating was like 1700 or something like that. Like it was barely above the baseline, but there were just were no events. So
yeah.
And after that, like we just would play every pre-release on Sunday, there'd be two-headed giant. So we've probably played like 20 or 25 matches of two-headed giant together, and that's probably my favorite format.
Yeah. Speaking of giants, after my top 8 disappointment, I stormed into the exhibit hall, and I met Jonathan Medina. he was playing a Star Trek Catan with his wife. He was there for one day only, and I got to meet him, and it was a very big thrill. It was very brief. He was busy doing his thing. He hugged me. I didn't know if I should hug him. I didn't know if we were that cool yet. I was like, I'm going to extend a handshake because you're you, and you're technically my boss. And he was like, come here, and he gave me a hug. He was very, very nice. I did feel a little bad, though, because I made his wife jump because she had her back towards me, and she shook my hand. She's very, very lovely. But I was coming off of what happened, so when Medina asked me how my day was going, I was like, oh, you know, I just top 8ed a TCG player open. It was a shit show. And the minute I said shit show, she literally like jumped in her chair. And I was like, oh, sorry, I probably shouldn't have said that. And oh God, I'm crass. And then he gave me a legit MTG t-shirt, which I've been begging him for. And he asked me to try it on, and it was actually too big for me. So I told him it was too big, and he was like, yeah, I'll get you a smaller size. And then he never did. and then I didn't see him after that. So it was very quick. And I was just happy to say that I met him, and he was very lovely from what I knew of him. And then after that was the Celebrity Sealed event. And most of the people participating worked for Wizards. So Gavin Verhey was there. Scott was there. Scott, he's a very common last name. I'm not thinking of it right now, but he was there. A guy named Drew was there who does R&D for Kaijudo. Helen Bergio was there. Rashad Miller. Love Rashad Miller. He is like, he's fabulous. I love him. So he was there. And then the guy who Dark Confidant was drawn for was there.
Bob Barr Jr.
Such a rock star. Like, he would be in the middle of his games, and people were always coming up to him like, you said my sure. And without missing a beat, he ended up performing really, really well overall in the event and didn't miss an autograph. Very, very nice guy. So are you familiar with Celebrity Sealed?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So every round has a theme to it. So I was playing a Celestia beatdown deck, which is very common. Round one was the Howling Mine round, which was everybody draws an extra card. Not too bad. Nobody really wanted to play first. everybody wanted to draw. That was a fun round. I lost to a guy who was playing that really expensive blue enchantment where anytime your creature gets targeted with something, you have to sacrifice it. I think it's like Dismiss into Reality or Dismiss into Dream or something like that.
Yeah.
So that, and he had 4 Master Tacticians.
Wee.
Bullshit. I couldn't even be mad at him though. Like that was freaking genius. Like when I saw him like assembling the combo, I was like, oh shit. And it was genius. I couldn't be mad at him. I thought it was really witty and very fun, and he was very proud of himself. So I lost to that guy. Round two, every creature had colorless fire breathing. Which definitely made things interesting when you're able to like pump up your griffins to like 14-2 or whatever. That was a fun round. Round three was the cycling round where every land had cycling.
Ooh.
Wasn't very impressive to me, at least. Round four was the best round. So at the start of every round, the announcer would sort of give a spiel announcing what the theme would be. And he basically said something to the effect of, throughout the years, there have been several mechanics that people have loved and people have hated. And, today we're going to give R&D a taste of their own medicine of a mechanic that people thought was broken or whatever. And they were like, the theme of round four, every card has Cascade.
Ooh.
And you could literally see the R&D guys like, I want to go home. Like, I don't want to do this. And I was playing Gavin Verhey that round, which was hilarious because Gavin was playing more of like an Izzity type deck, which means he really didn't have many permanents. Whereas I was playing mostly permanents. So I was getting free griffins, free elves. It was a really good time. Yeah, Cascade is crazy, especially when you play like a turn one Elvish Mystic. And you're like cascade for zero, and then you have to like cascade your whole deck, knowing you have nothing that costs zero.
Yeah,
And
that's a
yeah,
bummer.
how did that mechanic ever get out? Like
I don't know. The thing about Cascade that made it broken was if you countered the spell, they still got the free stuff.
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's insane.
So they're like, okay, I'll play Bloodbraid Elf. You're like, Mana Leak. They're like, that's fine. Just let me Cascade. I hit a Blightning. And you're like, oh!
That's it. No, that's not right. What?
Yes,
Yeah.
when you cast it.
That's crazy.
When you
Yeah.
cast this spell, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card that costs less.
So the spell doesn't have to resolve, just the fact that you cast it was enough. Out of control.
You would have to. Well, that's why stuff like oh, what was that counter spell for like two blue and a red that countered two spells? Stuff like that.
Okay.
Like to hit
Oh.
Cascade. Yeah, that was the point of that. It says counter two spells. That's the only way you
Okay.
could put two spells on the stack.
Oh, that was crazy. But it was a
Yeah.
lot of fun. I ended up beating him. That was a good time. I came in 3-1 and won some packs from that. That was a really good time. Hélène Bergio dropped early and gave me her packs because each celebrity had like a bounty on them. So she gave me her two packs, and that was a really good time. And then I think I went to PF Chang's and called it an early night. And I definitely agree with you about Sunday because I was somebody who left really early Sunday and I felt very bad because I feel like I missed some opportunities to do some last minute things. Like there was a ladies only draft that some girls had got together. And I think next year I'm definitely going to make room for Sunday and stay for Sunday and leave Monday and really get the whole experience. So you brought up something really interesting on your blog that I want to use to close out the show, and you weren't the only one that brought this up, Jason. And you talked about how Wizards definitely missed some opportunities this year. Magic wasn't as represented at Gen Con as some people thought it should be. Attendance was definitely down in terms of Magic events. My TCG player event being an example of that. And there was just a lot of disappointment that Wizards didn't do more there.
Yeah. There was nothing. There was the 20th anniversary draft thing that was really cool, but I don't know that that wasn't all the TO's idea. Like, I know Wizards probably would have had to provide prize support because there was packs from every set ever, which
Wasn't
is
that even
nuts.
invite only?
You had to win qualifying events.
Right.
So there were eight qualifying events over the course of the weekend, and the eight people that won those played in that event. But it just didn't really seem like, because you compare it to like PAX, where PAX is like, hey, everybody in the door gets these Chandra goggles and these guild pins, and we're going to spoil a bunch of cards from the new set. They didn't do dick at Gen Con. I was like, we don't get a new Theros card. We don't get anything. Like, it didn't seem right to me. Like, I don't think that Magic would be a game if it weren't for Gen Con.
Right, because
Like,
didn't it get started there?
yeah,
Yeah.
93, 94, like the first Worlds was at Gen Con in 94. Like it, I really feel like Magic, I don't know that they owe Gen Con something necessarily, but they basically, if they'd have done those planeswalkers they did at San Diego at Gen Con instead, that would have felt a little bit more like they're like, all right, we understand Gen Con's really important to our history. We're gonna give something back. We're gonna, the people that have supported this game over the years, you know, should get something special for Magic's 20th anniversary. It didn't feel like any other Gen Con. In fact, it felt less than last year, because last year the World Cup was there,
yeah,
and that wasn't even there this year. Mm-hmm. So Magic was actually down from the 19th to the 20th year. It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Well, there were also people that were really unhappy, and they continue to be unhappy with the way that Pastimes runs their events. And I didn't know this. Like, I didn't know that people felt that strongly about it, where I had a couple of friends of mine that were like, I will not support them. I will not play in events by them. And the more I think about it, the more I can see where they're coming from. And it makes me wonder why they're allowed to keep running the show if there's so much negative feedback around them.
You know, I really couldn't tell you. I don't know how that bidding works. Mm-hmm. It may just be that they have to convince Gen Con that they're the TO that should handle it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that Wizards just doesn't care. Or I'm sure every TO gets up a lot of bad feedback. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people are going to complain, and there are going to be people like, oh, well, you know, after this slight, I'll never blah, 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 this tournament place again. It happens. I'm not saying Pastimes is great or whatever, but I think bitch is going to bitch, I guess. So, I think any TO would just be like, people are going to complain, but the fact that the generic tickets come in $2 increments meant that a $15 draft was now 16.
Yeah.
The prize payout kind of sucked. Mm-hmm. Most of the events were M14.
Yeah.
Like, I just, playing Magic side events at Gen Con has always been like, oh, I like Magic, I like this, but like, you do so many M14 drafts, and you're like, I just wish I were dead. it's core set every year. Every year Gen Con falls on core set. It's like, can we just do an RGD draft, please? They're like, no, it's an M14 draft. So that sort of made my decision not to subject my wife to a booster draft much easier. Two-headed Giant would have been fine, because it would have been me playing both hands and her like, I know how to tap mana.
I actually really like that about Two-Headed Giant. I love that Two-Headed Giant really does sort of bring out the couples. And what I love the most about it is being able to tell which couple is not doing so hot based on how they play. So, like, you can tell the couples that don't communicate, that don't listen to one another, and you're just like, you guys aren't so fabulous, you know? And then there's the couples that really do work well together, and it's a good team-building exercise. And I love seeing those couples that can just pull it off. And then there's the really awkward ones where it's like, you know, why don't you do this? Why are you telling me what to do? And they start fighting in front of you, and you're like, I really shouldn't be enjoying this, but I can't look away. And like, it's like a sick, like a car wreck or something. And
right, right.
Yeah.
I'd almost want to just like have her be the primary and see how well we do.
You don't think she could do it?
Well, it's just, she's new. She's got to read a lot of cards, and I've been playing since 1996. Mm-hmm. So that's a long time. That's more than half of my life.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't want to partner with her, I'll totally do it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's actually something else that really kind of disappointed me a little bit, was like, I really kind of made sure that I was available for this weekend. And what I mean by that is I spent last year doing all events and turning down a lot of opportunities to hang out with people. And I purposely made sure that my schedule was very open this year. And I was just constantly putting it out there where it's like, if you need an eighth for something, if you need a buddy for something, if you need a third for something, if you need, you know, whatever, I'm here. I'm happy to do whatever. I'll draft, I'll do a standard, I'll do a Two-Headed Giant. And I don't know, there were a lot of people that were like talking a really good game that were like, you know, oh, I'd love to do something with you, or I'll take you up on that. And nobody ever did. And that's not to say that I'm that awesome where I felt like people should, but I just felt like, you know, I really expected people who had spent the past 6 months saying, oh god, I'll have to look you up when I'm there, and it never happened. Or, you know, I was always trying to do something with other people, and people were either fine on their own, or they only wanted to stick with the people that they knew. And I don't know, I was just hoping to get in more, you know, new situations, or, and it just didn't happen like that.
There's too much to do.
Could
really
be.
Like,
yeah.
There were people that I knew from back home that I ran into there. I'm like, oh, we should do something. And everyone's like, oh, we should do something. But like, but what? But when? If you don't say something then, like, it's just too many people I knew there, mm-hmm. that like I couldn't, there weren't enough hours in the day to do stuff with everybody. And really everybody kind of wanted to do their own thing anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone was kind of like groups of two or four, and just, we're going to go game. We got this and this. And everyone's like, I want to do this at this time. There's just, it's hard. Like, it's easier to meet up for dinner afterward. Mm-hmm. I think that's the easier thing to do, but even then I couldn't get anybody for Sushi Club. Which surprised me. I think Sushi Club may be Indianapolis's best kept secret. It's not downtown. You got to drive a bit. It's over on 10th Street. Clearly used to be a Pizza Hut, but it's actually it's so obviously used to be a Pizza Hut. It's probably the best value because I know people started like, let's go to Fogo. Fogo's nuts. And so like all the Magic players, whenever there was Indianapolis, everyone went to Fogo to chow. Lately, that's turned into St. Elmo's, which is a really high-end steakhouse. They got famous shrimp cocktail. It's famous because the cocktail sauce is 100% horseradish.
Didn't Adam Szaborski say he topped out at, what, 50 shrimp cocktails?
He ate all the shrimps. They were just giving him free stuff. He's like, you realize these are 15 bucks a pop. Give me all the scrimps.
Give no fucks.
Yeah. I don't care if I paid $500 just for shrimp. I can't get this back home. So, yeah, I mean, St. Elmo's is sort of the new Fogo de Chão for, like, you know, the high rollers in the magic scene. But if you want, if you like sushi, it's actually, it's not like all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet sushi either. It's, like, real actual rolls. Mm-hmm. It's like, $23 a person for all-you-can-eat. It's a good value. So that's where we like to go. Our friend Jeff Foster actually found that place on Yelp or something like that, like, 2 years ago at a GP Indy, and we've been going ever since. But that's not downtown. But downtown, there are so many food trucks, like, why wouldn't you hit that up, too? So, like, there's a line out the door at Steak and Shake. I'm like, you people can do better than Steak and Shake. Like, one of the first times I ever met Corbin in person, we were in Indianapolis for the Invitational, and he somehow shanghaied the whole group into going to Buffalo Wild Wings, and I've never forgiven him. Like, that's where the whole, like, Buffalo Wild Wings trope on Brainstorm Brewery came from. It was just my rage at, like, I drove 4 hours to Indianapolis. I don't want to eat at Buffalo Wild Wings. We have those in back home.
Right.
Like, why can't we go somewhere that's Indianapolis specific? So that's what I encourage people to do. When you travel, find somebody who lives in that town. Twitter's great for that. And ask them where to go that, like, is that town specific. Like, Buffalo Wild Wings is safe and everything, but, like, you know, if you're going to go out to dinner with a bunch of people, like, go somewhere that you can't go everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's what I like to do. So, yeah, Indianapolis is, it's probably easier to meet up with people for dinner than it is to be like, oh, well, let's at some point in the future game together. Because there are enough hours in the day. Even if you're there till, like, your feet hurt and you're exhausted, you still, you know, there's still another 10 hours worth of games you could have played. Mm-hmm.
So, Jason, if anybody has enjoyed listening to you on the show, how can they get a hold of you? How can they get in touch with you? Where can they find you?
I make myself very available. Let's go down the list, shall we? Okay. The first thing I did was start writing for QuietSpeculation.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on the free side of QuietSpeculation.com. Therefore, my articles are visible by everybody. They're not super financy. Well, I feel like if I write on the free side, I shouldn't give away finance info because that's sort of unfair to the people writing behind the paywall. So my articles are just crazy on QS. I have no guidance whatsoever. It's amazing. you can find me in the Quiet Speculation forums also, if you're a member. You can find me in the MTG Finance subreddit on Reddit.
Oh, Reddit.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad.
I only go on Reddit for two things. Big old girl here. Pretty Little Liars and RuPaul's Drag Race. Those are the safest Reddits I know. Anything other than that is this dark, murky land that I'm just terrified to dip my toe into.
When I'm not in the MTG Finance subreddit, I write for GatheringMagic.com.
Yay.
I write the Who to Follow column that we discussed at length. Our podcast, Brainstorm Brewery, also on GatheringMagic.com. Mm-hmm. Check out brainstormbrewery.com in the future for lots of exciting developments. I'm on Twitter at Jason E. Alt. And I think that's all the relevant places to track me down. I'm on Facebook, obviously, because I wasn't forever because it was terrible. Mm-hmm. Like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I got a Facebook friend request from my mother. And I was like, sorry, Mom, I can't be your friend because I just deleted my Facebook account right now. And I just kind of stayed away forever, but it's good for networking and good for getting your articles and stuff out there. So I'm back on the Facebook, and I will accept your friend request.
I've definitely made the decision to start putting more personal things on Facebook and then less personal things on Twitter. So, and it's weird that people, I've had people find me on Facebook from the show and things like that. And once I verify that we have some mutual friends, I used to keep Facebook people that I knew in real life. So I had to have met you at least once in order to be your Facebook friend. And I've lightened up a little bit on that since the show has taken off, because if we have mutual friends that I know, you're okay in my book. And if you want to peek in my world, I'll let you in there. And I've loosened up a little bit on that. But there was a time where I was very, very, you know, firm about the fact that if I didn't know you, you weren't getting in there. And
well, you can sort of partition it now. Mm-hmm. You can be like, it asks you when you accept a friend request if you know the person.
Yeah.
So you can kind of divert some people to followers and some people to actual friends. Like,
yeah.
Friends can see your pages, followers can see your updates.
Yeah.
So even if I don't want to share my entire life with someone who's a fan, like I certainly want people to see my updates because they're for everybody.
Yeah, my life is pretty much an open book anyways, so I really try not to filter that. And I tend to not say anything I wouldn't want anyone to see anyways. So there's very little I wouldn't say on either page, but I just decided just to keep Facebook more personal so I'm not blowing up 1,300 people with my with my other issues. So it's just a little decision I made. So Jason, I am very, very happy that I was able to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. And any time in the near future that you can squeeze me onto the brewery, even though I don't drink, I would love to come on your show sometime. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Don't drink?
I don't. I can have a drink. But I don't set myself out. Like if you were to ask me what I'm doing tomorrow night, I wouldn't be like, I'm going drinking. It would be like, I'm going somewhere. I will have a drink. I will probably nurse that drink throughout the night, but I don't set out to like pound them back. Anytime that I've been drunk, it's been purely accidental. I don't know how strong something is. Something tastes really, really good and I just start drinking lots of it. People buy me drinks and I can't say no.
Ah, you're a girl drink drunk.
Possibly. But I'm also the type where when I know that I'm drunk, I usually go straight home. Like I'm the type where it's like, okay, I need to not embarrass myself. I'ma go. Like, and then I go home and eat cold hot dogs and watch the Golden Girls and I sleep it off. And, but I try not to embarrass myself when I'm drunk and just, okay, I need to go home now. And yeah, so I don't really drink.
I've always liked the taste of like expensive liquor, mm-hmm. like very expensive liquor. And then like good craft microbrew. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get drunk cheaply. So I just pretty much didn't do it.
Right.
Because yeah. I can't drink like Miller Lite, like the people who drink 10 so they don't feel feelings.
So if you can look past that, Jason, I would love to come on the show sometime. So please definitely keep me in mind for that.
Yeah, will do. This was a great time.
Cool.
I don't know. I didn't expect it not to be. But it still was. I'm not surprised, but it was a good time.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. And if anyone else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on The Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. The Deck Tees also has its own Twitter account, all podcast news all the time, at The Deck Tees. My personal Twitter account, if you're interested in following me and my crazy adventures, is at Original Estrus, OriginalOestrus. If you have something a little more personal for me, you can always email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.